I'm going to read Mark 2:15-17. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Colin.
Thank you, Beverly. In 1850, Anne Marie Reeves married Granville Jarvis, the son of a Baptist minister who became a successful merchant in nearby Taylor County. The Jarvis family, like many during the mid-1800s, experienced frequent tragedy and loss. Anne Marie bore between 11 and 13 children, no one's sure exactly how many, over the course of only 17 years. And of these, only four survived to adulthood. The others died of diseases such as measles, typhoid, and diphtheria. These losses inspired Jarvis to take action to help her community combat childhood diseases and unsanitary conditions. In 1858, while pregnant with her sixth child, Jarvis began Mother's Day work clubs in the towns of Grafton, Pruntytown, Philippi, Fetterman, and Webster, Virginia. These clubs sought to provide assistance and education to families in order to reduce disease and infant mortality, while raising money to buy medicine and to hire women to work in families where the mother suffered from tuberculosis or other health problems. During the American Civil War, sentiment in the western part of the state was sharply divided between North and South. Ultimately, in 1863, the western part of Virginia broke away from the main part of Virginia and formed the new state of West Virginia, which was loyal to the Union. Jarvis's Mother's Day work clubs altered their mission to meet the changing demands brought about by war. Anne urged the clubs to declare neutrality and to provide aid to both Confederate and Union soldiers. She illustrated her resolve to remain neutral and aid both sides by refusing to support a proposed division of the Methodist Church into a northern and southern branch. Additionally, she reportedly offered a lone prayer for Thornsby Bailey Brown, the first Union soldier killed in the Confederate area, while others refused. Under her guidance, the clubs fed and clothed soldiers from both sides. When typhoid fever and measles broke out in the military camps, Jarvis and her club members nursed the suffering soldiers from both sides at the request of the commander. And even after the fighting concluded, public officials, seeking ways to eliminate post-war strife, called on Jarvis to help. She and her club members planned a Mother's Friendship Day for soldiers from both sides and their families to help the healing process. And despite threats of violence, Jarvis successfully staged the event in 1868. She shared with the veterans a message of unity and reconciliation. Bands played both Dixie, the anthem of the South, and the Star-Spangled Banner, the anthem of the North. And the event ended with everyone, North and South, joining to sing Auld Lang Syne. This effective and emotional event reduced many to tears. It showed the community that old animosities were destructive and must end. Throughout her life, Jarvis strove to honor and help mothers. Her daughter, Anna, recalled her praying for someone to start a day to memorialize and honor mothers during a Sunday school lesson in 1876. And on the first anniversary of Jarvis's death, Anna met with friends and announced plans for a memorial service remembering her mother for the next year. And in May 1907, a private service was held in her honor. The following year, 1908, Anna organized the first official observance of Mother's Day, coming near the anniversary of her mother's death. And it was Andrews Methodist Church that held the first public service on the morning of May 10th, 1908. Anna did not attend the service, but sent a donation of 500 white carnations for all those in attendance. And in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson signed a congressional resolution officially making the second Sunday in May the National Mother's Day. What struck me most about the history of Jarvis's service to humanity was her neutrality. Neutrality is an interesting concept. To some people, it smacks of weakness, of indecision, or politics, playing both sides at once. It can sound like you have no opinion about others, almost as if you don't see anything other than a bland, neutral, faceless human unit in front of you. It can seem like one is trying to please everyone and lacking the fortitude to take a side. In fact, the dictionary definition can include, quote, an absence of decided views, expression, or strong feeling. It can also mean non-involvement and detachment. But that doesn't sound like Anna Jarvis. Neutrality can also have the sense of freedom from judgment, lack of prejudice, and open-mindedness. And in all the best possible ways, Jesus demonstrated what I would call positive neutrality. It wasn't a passive, just mind your own business, live and let live, non-involvement that Jesus and Jarvis demonstrated. Rather, it was a sometimes dangerous, radical, risky, active decision to reach down to the most hurting, the most vulnerable, the most needy, to see their humanity as equal and as important as the greatest in the eyes of the world. We may not like to think that Jesus was neutral. Surely someone given the title Son of God would strongly favor those who accepted his view of God, those who followed and obeyed him. Surely a rabbi of his status would have little time for stupidity, ignorance, and weakness, and rebellion. And bear in mind that Jesus lived in a male-dominated, legalistic society that tended to shun the unrighteous, the poor, the sick, those with inferior status, and the powerless. And so as a Jewish rabbi, we might expect the same reaction from Jesus. So let's examine some of our assumptions about Jesus that might lead someone to expect that he could not be neutral. Didn't Jesus hate sinners? In Luke 5, 27 to 32, it reads as follows. Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi, definitely a sinner, sitting at his tax booth, exploiting and extorting from everyone in his community. Jesus said to him, "Follow me, get up and come after me." And Levi did exactly that. You'll notice that Jesus was most definitely not on the hunt for supporters, for like-minded people who would naturally fit into his little clique, to his little group. It says, then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors, read sinners, and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples. Not to Jesus, to his disciples. They're talking behind his back. They're picking away, not directly to Jesus, saying, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? You should hate them. We hate them. You should hate them. And Jesus answered them. So they didn't talk to Jesus. He heard them beacon off to the disciples, and he interrupted that conversation, turned around, and said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor. That's why I'm here. Why would I go hang out around righteous people? I don't hate sinners. I recognize that those who need a doctor are the sick, and I have not come to call the righteous. In actual fact, there weren't any righteous, but I've come to call sinners to repentance. Secondly, didn't Jesus hate the Pharisees? No. Surprisingly, he didn't. He clearly expressed frustration and even anger towards religious elitism and self-righteousness, but not because certain elitist, self-righteous individuals were Pharisees. Remember, the word Pharisee literally translated means separated. And Pharisees were those religious specialists who actually loved the law of God and sincerely and passionately desired to distance themselves from anything unclean and fulfill the requirements of the law as totally and as perfectly as possible. And I'm sure that Jesus actually respected and admired the good intentions of the Pharisaical movement as a whole. And we have a very interesting exchange recorded in Luke 7 where it says that all the people, once again including the tax collectors, when they heard Jesus' words, acknowledged that God's way was right because they had been baptized by John. But the Pharisees and the experts in the law rejected God's purpose for themselves because they had not been baptized by John. So we have a significant group of Pharisees who are in strong opposition to what Jesus and John are teaching. They stand in opposition to his message and his mission. But notice the next scene in the story. Rather than hating Pharisees in Luke 7:36, but when one of the same Pharisees invited Jesus to dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's home and reclined at his table. You don't go to dinner with people you hate. You dine with friends and or people you hope to engage and build a relationship with. Third, Jesus was a Jew, and didn't Jews hate Gentiles? Well, most did, actually. Centuries of indoctrination about quote-unquote purity and separation, about the distinction between God's people, that is, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and everyone else, between clean and unclean, left the Jewish people of Jesus' day craving that special feeling that they were still the chosen ones. And they did this by emphasizing the distinctions between the two groups. They often saw themselves, certainly wanted to see themselves, as special and superior. Bear in mind that for the previous few hundred years, the religious element of Judaism was determined to understand why they had seemingly been abandoned by God, captured and controlled and imprisoned and punished by successive Gentile kingdoms. But Jesus did not hate Gentiles. In the Gospels, the two most significant group of Gentiles are the Roman occupiers and the Samaritans. Remember, Samaritans, yes, they were descended loosely from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob's line, but they were the northern kingdom. They'd been taken captive. They had been, you might say, inbred with Gentiles to the point that they were no longer recognizable as part of the Israelite tribes. Jesus is very comfortable responding to the questions and requests of the Roman centurion to heal his servant, found in Matthew 8. He didn't say, I'm sorry, I'm not here for you, I'm here for my Jewish brothers and sisters. But it is the encounters with the Samaritans that are most surprising and scandalous, especially when Jesus draws a Samaritan woman living outside of wedlock, to become a follower of his. and the story of a Samaritan demonstrating a higher ethic than even the best of the best that the Jewish authorities could offer when encountering a bloodied and beaten man lying and dying on the road, this was an example of Jesus' respect for and inclusion of Gentiles in general. Fourth, Jesus was a Jew, and didn't Jewish men avoid public interactions with women because they felt separated from them, superior perhaps? Well, first of all, let's not forget that all ancient societies, including the Judean Jews, were heavily patriarchal. Men were the rulers and the leaders. Women were expected to be somewhat subservient and keepers of the home. And Jesus didn't overlook gender differences, but he refused to allow gender bias to limit women's dignity and service. Just a few examples. Luke 8:40-49. He consistently opposed the cultural devaluation of women's bodies, such as when he healed a hemorrhaging woman in public. That is something no other rabbi at the time would have done. In John 4, he spoke with women unselfconsciously, in broad daylight, despite the disapproval of the disciples. Third, in Luke 10, unlike the rabbis of his day, Jesus allowed women to sit at his feet and study his teachings, preparing them for service as disciples, evangelists, and teachers. And in all ways, the equality of women was self-evident, implicit, and most importantly, consistently part of Christ's practice and teaching. And fifth, Jesus was a Jew, and didn't Jewish men avoid public interaction with children? Well, we cannot underestimate the profound reaction of Jesus towards children, a response that shocked even his and troubled his disciples. The famous incident in Matthew 19 reads that when people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, and when you do that, you're saying, you're important too, you're included too, you're valuable too, as valuable as anyone else, the disciples rebuked the people who brought the children, basically saying, he's too important for this, take them away. He doesn't have time for some people that are so unimportant. And Jesus said, let the children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these, the ones that are lowly and meek and seemingly less important. These are examples of what, again, I would call positive neutrality in action. Dangerous in some cases and unprecedented. He was severely rebuked and criticized because of these kinds of neutrality, because he spoke to women, because he included them in his group, because he was willing to dine with sinners, tax collectors. Anne Marie Jarvis lived her life the way she did because she was a mother who could empathize with other mothers. She lived her life the way she did with a desire to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. She shared his compassion for others, and she agreed with his ethic of positive neutrality towards friends and enemies alike. And she passed on those Christ-like traits to her own daughter, who passed them on to others, who passed them on to others. And on this day in which we give special honor to mothers, I want us to celebrate the highest ethic taught by Jesus, lived out in very practical ways, as demonstrated in the life of Anne Marie Jarvis. That is, that it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick, and it is our job to bring them aid. Jesus did not only come to give rejuvenation and life to those who were spiritually dying, but he gave us an example to be followed, along with the spiritual gifts, to carry out his ministry of positive neutrality to the lost and the lonely and the suffering in our world today.